First up on Sunday Extra today, we're going to look at the role of a perhaps surprisingly important player in the indirect, complex and highly fraught negotiations between the United States and Iran. And that player is Pakistan. Late last week, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian praised Pakistan's effective efforts to reach the still-to-be-confirmed Memorandum of Understanding between Iran and the United States. And according to our guest this morning, one man in particular, Pakistan's Chief of Defence Forces, Field Marshal Asim Munir, has made himself the indispensable interlocutor between Washington and Tehran. Bobby Ghosh is a geopolitical analyst and columnist, a former international editor of Time magazine. He wrote about Asim Munir in his Substack, Ghosh World, in a piece called Asim Munir Will Be the Winner of Any Iran Deal. Bobby, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Oh, morning, Julian. Hi.
You were admittedly a skeptic of the role of both Pakistan and Asim Munir in terms of mediating between the US and Iran. So what's happened, Bobby?
Well, I was very skeptical when it was first announced that Pakistan was going to host the negotiations. My sense was that it was not really qualified for that role, that Pakistan did not have the diplomatic depth to pull this off. It did not have good relations with the Iranians. Iran's relations with Pakistan have always been sketchy. That relations with the United States were on the mend, but hadn't yet got to the point where the Americans could trust them. A mediator in a conflict needs several things. Needs to be trusted by all parties. That was not the case. Needs to have long-standing, deep relations with the principals in the room, which is not the case. The way mediation works is usually the two belligerents get to a point where they disagree on some of the finer points of what is on the table. At that moment, the mediator takes one party aside and has a quiet word in their ear. And that's when personal relationships and trust really comes into play. And they say, look, I know you're not getting exactly what you want, but listen to me, old pal. You remember that time we were having coffee in my place and we were talking about the futures of our country and, you know, we discussed this and we discussed. I'm simplifying, of course, but that's the kind of thing. That's the sort of little nudge, a little wink, a little push in the right direction. That's what you need. And the Pakistanis simply didn't have that, which is why I was skeptical. But what I had not accounted for were two things. One is that, well, for one thing, nobody else really was stepping up to the plate. Whereas most of the countries in the world, I think we can agree, wanted the conflict to end. Not a lot of people were stepping up to say, we'd like to play that role. There were a couple of Gulf Arab countries and there was Pakistan. And the second thing I did not account for was that Asim Munir, the field marshal and effectively the ruler of Pakistan, was determined to put a lot of effort and his personal prestige on the line to make this work. He really went to work on this. And there was quite a lot at stake for him. If this had gone very badly, he would come out of this looking the fool. And if there is one thing that a military leader of a country, particularly Pakistan, cannot afford, it is to look like a fool. So he really worked it hard. He got on the plane. He went to Tehran a couple of times. He got on the phone all the time. And he worked his relationship with Donald Trump. This is the man, remember, who twice has nominated Donald Trump for the Nobel Peace Prize. And that works, you know, that counts for a lot with our Don. And Donald Trump calls him his favorite field marshal. And so he really worked that relationship. So in the long and short of it is the man really worked hard on it. And he's put himself in a place where, at this stage, no matter where the negotiations goes, he's earned a lot of brownie points. He's earned brownie points with Donald Trump for having brought the deal to this place. He's earned brownie points with the Iranians. As you said, Pezeshkian has been praising him. And he's won brownie points with the sort of larger world audience because they see that, okay, this is a man from an unexpected country, this is not Pakistan's traditional role in international affairs, who stepped up when it was needed and has put in the yards. So I think no matter where things go now in this conflict, he's banked quite a lot of brownie points.
And to what extent has this been a solo effort of Field Marshal Munir? Who else from Pakistan has been involved? And is it possible within the confines of confidential negotiations to get a sense of exactly how the personal dynamics are playing out?
The answer to the last question is no, we won't know. We can't know until after everything works out. And frankly, we may never know some of the details, that these things are kept in camera, behind closed doors for a reason. We know that Shehbaz Sharif, the prime minister, has also been playing a role. We know that there is a small team of Pakistani diplomats who've been doing the old shuttle diplomacy. But Asim Munir is the main man. There's no question. He's the guy in all the photographs. He's the guy who has been singled out for praise by both sides. And that is the hint, that is the clue we have, that he's the guy who is the prime mover. And it's also the nature of the relationship between the military and the politicians in Pakistan that at this current moment, Asim Munir is pretty much the big dog. And so we can say with a very high degree of confidence that he's the one who is the main negotiator.
Has Asim Munir played a role similar or even vaguely akin to the one that he's playing now? Why do you think he engaged so heavily in this particular extremely fraught conflict?
He has no track record of this. If Pakistan has no track record, he doesn't either. Listen, you don't get to become field marshal of the Pakistani military by being a conciliator. That is not, that is not a trait that is rewarded in any military, and certainly not the Pakistani military. So this is why it was a big surprise. And this is why initially a lot of people, myself included, were very skeptical. But I think he recognized that this was an opportunity for him. Consider where he was a little more than a year ago. Despite his good relations with Donald Trump, there was a bipartisan effort in Washington here by senators to sanction him for jailing Imran Khan, the democratically elected leader of Pakistan. His country's economy is in very, very bad shape. Relations with the neighbors, India, not great. There was a war about a year ago. In which Pakistan was able to fight to, the best way to describe it was an honorable draw, but with some damage. And so things were not looking good for him. And today he finds himself in a place where the president of the United States, the president of Iran, are praising him in public. There's no talk in Washington of applying sanctions to him. There's a great deal of gratitude worldwide for his efforts. So you have to give him credit for spotting the opportunity. This is not to say that things will go swimmingly for him from here on in. A lot of the underlying problems of Pakistan remain. But considering where he was a year ago, I think his personal situation is a lot better now.
On Sunday Extra, we're speaking with Bobby Ghosh about the role of Pakistan in the negotiations between Iran and the United States, and in particular, the role of the Pakistani Chief of Defence Forces, Field Marshal Asim Munir. Bobby, could you give us a little bit more of a sense of the traditional relationships between Pakistan and Iran, and how much that has apparently changed given the intervention of Asim Munir?
Pakistan and Iran have always had difficult relationships, not as difficult as Pakistan and India, obviously, but still quite difficult relationships. They have a long border, particularly along the Pakistani province of Balochistan. There are separatist groups on the Pakistani side of Balochis who, the Pakistanis say, have enjoyed the support of both India as well as Iran. Iran is a Shiite theocratic state. Pakistan is a Sunni majority state. There are historical frictions that are both territorial and sectarian. There have been clashes between the two from time to time on the border. Pakistan, only maybe a couple of years ago, there was an intrusion by Pakistani forces into Iran, which is quite rare, but it did take place. And so the relationship has sort of moved on a spectrum of cold to freezing. They've never really been warm, certainly not since the emergence of the Ayatollahs, the Islamic Republic of Iran. So they exchange ambassadors, they meet from time to time, the ambassadors do, and they go through the motions of basic diplomatic protocol. But there is no warmth there, there's no friendship there.
What do you think it is about the way Munir has played his hand that has made it possible for him to gain all those things you said he didn't have going into the mediation relationship with Iran, the trust, the ability to have those sorts of discussions? Do you have any sense of how he's managed to achieve that with Iran?
Well, a couple of things to keep in mind. One is that both the belligerents have to want to make a deal. No matter how good a negotiator you are, if the two parties don't want a deal, then you're not going to get anywhere. You could be the most persuasive person in the world, but and still not be able to move the needle. So his timing was right. Munir's timing was right. Both the United States and Iran were looking for an off-ramp. Both sides realized that this conflict was hurting their interests. In Iran's case, was hurting physically the country, the people, the military. They lost their supreme leader on the first night of the war. So that helped a lot. The fact that both sides wanted negotiations and wanted somebody to play the interlocutor. The second thing that has helped Munir is his unquestioned authority. He's not a bureaucrat. He's not a mid-level political figure. He is pretty much the uncontested leader of his country. Well, uncontested may not be the right word. He may be contested, but he's unassailable, shall we say. And he has the grand title to go with it. He's a field marshal. So his personal clout, he does not have to, unlike the other negotiators in the room, the American negotiators and the Iranian negotiators, he does not have to call headquarters for any sort of authority. At any moment on the spot, he is able to personally promise whatever is required. So this is just a hypothetical situation. We don't know that something like this happened, but it's the kind of thing that happened. Let's say you get to a point where the two sides disagree on something, and Pakistan needs to say that, okay, we can provide a safe house for such and such person. Let's say the Americans say, this Iranian figure has to leave. They have to leave the country. We won't have them be part of the administration, and they have to leave. And let's say the Iranians are not sure about that. For one thing, they're not sure where he would go. The Pakistani interlocutor at this stage can step up and say, well, we can host him. We can provide refuge. We can give them asylum. Now, in the normal situation, the mediator is a senior diplomat or a minister in the government. They would not be able to make that decision on the spot. They would have to say, let me get on the call to my boss and find out if it's okay. Asim Munir can make that call right there, right then. He knows he does not have to go to parliament. He doesn't have to go to a cabinet. He can just make that call. That really helps in negotiations. Even if he does not exercise that option, even if it never comes to that, the fact that everybody in the room knows that he has that kind of authority really makes a big difference. So those are the primary qualities, I think, that he was able to use, both the willingness of the parties to make some sort of a deal and his authority in Pakistan, his ability to cut through any kind of bureaucratic hassles and make a decision when required.
Given that you've described his position as unassailable within Pakistan already, do you have a sense of how this prominence of Asim Munir on the international stage has been received within Pakistan?
It's a little hard to tell. I have not seen any polling, and polling is notoriously difficult to rely on. But I have spoken to friends who are from Pakistan who are not big fans of Asim Munir, who are not fans of the Pakistani military. And there is grudging admiration, at the very least, that look, this man has brought Pakistan a certain amount of international kudos, which, if you are Pakistan, is not freely available. Pakistan has a reputational problem, has had for many years. That certainly is when you can get some international praise, that is most welcome. The fact that this is also driving the Indians up the wall, there's a great deal of schadenfreude to be derived from that in Pakistan. There's a fair amount of jealousy and unhappiness in India at the prominence that Pakistan is getting. And Pakistanis enjoy that, just as Indians would if the shoe was on the other foot. And in the political space, the fact that no one's talking about Imran Khan at the moment is an indicator. There are not people in the streets in Pakistan calling for the toppling of the military leader, calling for Asim Munir to go. How long that'll last, you can't tell. But for the moment, he's in a pretty good place.
Yes, well, win-win situations are very rare in any part of the world, let alone in complex international negotiations. Do you see any risks or downsides of the way Asim Munir has inserted himself into this situation, Bobby?
For him personally, no. For him personally, I think he comes out smelling of roses no matter what. For Pakistan, I've been talking so far about how Pakistan benefits from a little bit of international prestige. However, it does not feed the people, right? International prestige does not put bread on the table. And Pakistan has a very, very serious economic problem. Their economy has been in doldrums for many years, and it is only progressively gotten worse. There have been some sign of progress with the United States. An American company has agreed to invest about $500 million to mine for minerals in Pakistan. Credit for that also goes to Asim Munir. But that's only one project and it's not huge. And it won't create the kind of jobs or the momentum that the Pakistani economy needs. So that won't go away. Pakistan also has to be worried about the divisions that are emerging in the Gulf area because of this conflict, or are being magnified because of the conflict. Now, the rivalry between the United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia, that rivalry has deepened. The UAE, as we know, has sort of has exited from OPEC. That's not a good sign for unity in the Gulf. Pakistan owes a great deal of money to both those countries. Pakistan has depended on the largesse of both the Emiratis as well as the Saudis for many years. And the Emiratis are now threatening to call in their loans. That would put quite a lot of strain on the Pakistani exchequer. Will the Saudis be able to make up for that gap and bankroll the Pakistanis? We don't know. The Saudis also have to measure the damage this war has done to their economy when it's finally all over. And their purse strings may not be as loose as they have been in the past. So Pakistan has to negotiate that landscape. And there's also the matter of being in Trump's good books is good for as far as you can throw it, but you really can't throw it very far. For one thing, Trump's not going to be around forever. And the other thing with Donald Trump is, of course, he could wake up tomorrow morning and change his mind and decide that he doesn't like Asim Munir, that for some reason that none of us can predict, he's decided that the Pakistanis are the bad guys. It's a check you want to cash very quickly. And so those risks remain. The real risk of the Pakistani economy and the political risks that come with dealing with somebody as temperamental, shall we say, as Donald Trump, those risks are very, very much there. And Asim Munir cannot afford to rest on his laurels.
Well, given the conflict seems to have produced downsides for pretty well everyone concerned, it's been fascinating to identify at least one person who has come out well out of this situation. Bobby Ghosh, thank you so much for joining us on Sunday Extra this morning.
Thank you so much for having me.
And we were speaking there with Bobby Ghosh, geopolitical analyst, former international editor for Time magazine, and now the writer of the Substack Ghosh World.
Find more great ABC RN stories that take you beyond the headlines on the ABC Listen app.